Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's show is about those close creatures we really love, our pets, and what happens as they age. I have an old dog, Claire, who'll soon be 14. She's a lab husky mix, black and white with all white feet and a great attitude. We've had her since she was just a puppy. Picture lots of hiking, lots of companionship, lots of laughs, a real member of our family, really well loved. Now my dog is old and I'm afraid about the next chapter, our inevitable parting. Months ago, I started doing research about how to tell when the time was right and how to handle it. Claire hates going to the vet, and I couldn't imagine her last moments alive spent being terrified and anxious. When her time came, I wanted her to pass at home as stress-free as I could make it. This has been on my mind for months, and so at dog parks, I frequently end up in conversation with other dog owners about these last chapters. It seemed everyone had a story, everyone could relate, everyone had advice. Or at least they had the same questions I did. And that's what led to today's show, to talk about the parting of pets and the best ways to handle that. Our guest today is longtime Anchorage veterinarian John Hightower. Welcome, John.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Really delighted to have you. And I feel already consoled with you. You're just so calming and reassuring. I feel glad that you're our guest today. We'll be talking about how pets and our attachment to them has increased over time and why that has happened. We'll talk about some of the ethical issues keeping a dog alive for yourself rather than for your pet's own well-being. And what about the money issues? Is it okay to spend thousands of dollars on pet medical bills? Even if we can afford it, should we? We'd love to know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. If you have questions about treating your aging dog or cat well, this is a good show for you. Or if you just have a story to tell us, we'd really, really love to hear it. I'm going to share our phone numbers with you. If you're in Anchorage, you can give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage. And at hometownalaska@alaskapublic.org is where you can send us an email if you'd just like to send us an email. So Dr. Hightower, so glad you could make it today. We've been chatting before the show about our dogs. Let you tell people a little bit about yourself. You've been here for a long time. I bet a lot of people in our audience actually recognize your name.
Well, I've been here really since 2004, but I started coming up in 1985. I've got a couple of degrees from the University of Texas and a couple of degrees from Texas A&M University, and a doctor of veterinary medicine is one, of course. Anyway, I just fell in love with Alaska, and I've had several practices in Texas, which I sold, and just loved Alaska so much. I've got four cousins and used to have an aunt and uncle up here, but they passed away. And worked for Pet Emergency and Bering CVCA Animal Hospital. So, and then I retired in 2010. And I've been doing an occasional in-home euthanasia for people that I know.
Did the Iditarod have anything to do with getting you up here in the beginning?
No, I was really intrigued by the Iditarod, and I did go out on the trail as a trail veterinarian in 2009, I think, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, and the dogs were just the sweetest and most well-cared-for dogs that are around, and they love to run. There's a story, the professor of mine from A&M went to Nome, and he was x-raying these dogs' chests, see what the hearts looked like after the race. Anyway, he took an x-ray of one dog, and he sent it to, I think, Michigan State, and said, should this dog, you know, exercise? Excuse me. And they said, no, he'll drop dead. Was Larry.
Oh, the dog Larry, which was a lead dog for a famous...
I can't even think of the name.
Yeah, but it's not Lance Mackey, is it?
Lance Mackey.
Yeah, okay, Lance
Larry.
Mackey. Larry, his lead dog. So, wonder what he saw in the chest that He wasn't really asking that question, was he?
He just had a big heart.
Yeah.
Huge heart.
Yeah.
And the cardiologist at Michigan State thought it was diseased.
But it was from exercise.
Right.
From health. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So most of the dogs you saw out there were in pretty good shape.
They were in, you know, great shape.
Athletic shape.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Love to run.
Yeah. Well, that's a special thing Alaska has, the Iditarod. And I think a lot of us have Alaska Huskies because of the because of the Iditarod. I happen to have a Husky Lab mix. But really, I thought we'd start off. Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your dogs, because I know you have dogs. Your practice has been cats and dogs primarily. Right. Tell us a little bit about your dogs.
I've got a Golden Retriever mix who's just great, well-trained. He's 10. And then we have a Border Collie that's 15 and kind of showing her age a little bit. And so we've got her on some medications, but she still gets around and eats. And then we have a cat that we rescued, 23 pounds.
Oh, my.
Best cat we ever had.
Happy cat.
Oh, just unbelievable. It acts like a dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's just one of the pack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she's healthy.
Yeah, he.
Sorry. I think of she because my dog's a she.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's healthy.
Very healthy. He's very, very healthy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when I was sort of reading about old dogs and one of the we're very invested in our animals, and it seems to me that people who grew up on farms never really thought about their animals this way. If they were able to contribute, they got to stick around. If they weren't able to contribute, it was easier to let them go. But now it feels as if animals are really part of our families. And I wonder, in the course of your long career, did you see that shift, or what would you say about that?
Well, I think the shift towards having dogs be part of the family has been, by the time I got out of vet school and started practicing, which has been 40 years now, I think the shift had already pretty much concluded, and pets were family members. And all the management people and seminars that we went, you know, would go see, we talk about, you know, oh, don't call it a dog or don't call it a cat, call it a pet or,
friend. Yeah, you're not a pet owner, you're a pet parent, I think.
Oh, yeah, changes all the time.
So it's really, I mean, it might be a sign of our prosperity that this could happen, and also our lifestyle. I know my mom was an RN, and the dog we had growing up was not allowed in the house.
Right.
Whereas my dog, you know, is in the house all the time.
Right.
So even though it's a husky and might like being outdoors, it just grew up in the house. And so it's just assumes that it's a house dog.
Yep. Yeah. They really take to the inside very well.
Yeah.
And they like to be with you. I mean, it's, you know, leaving them alone is real hard for
me.
That
was the biggest thing I noticed. If we're out in the backyard, she loves to be in the backyard with us. But
right.
She doesn't really want to be in the backyard by herself.
Right.
You know, even as a puppy. But the dog I grew up with was content to be out there, actually. I guess he just didn't have a choice. That's probably it.
Good possibility.
So I read that like 62% of American households all have a pet, a cat or a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So well over half. And that I've seen different figures, like we spend from anywhere from $51 billion to $61 billion on our pets. I think that's probably changed in the 40 years you've been had your career, just because I think we make more things now. I mean, you know, pet costumes for Halloween, for example.
Right.
Or, you know, you know, designer dog bowls or designer water bowls or things like that. So we can spend a lot of money. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. In the late 60s and early 70s, it was started to get very competitive in the area of specialists. There would, you know, be dermatologists and surgery specialists and emergency medicine was a specialty, and you
within veterinary medicine,
right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, people were able to rather than just, you know, go to the regular vet who did everything and get a shot, and if that didn't work, go back and get something else. they would be referred to, you know, the specialists, internal medicine, just on and on, cardiology.
Just like a human.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so they really kind of started being little people to us,
uh-huh.
I think.
And that contributed to it, too.
And you could spend a lot of money on, I mean, they do total hip replacements. They do knee replacements on dogs. And you can run up a big bill really quickly. And the specialists usually have really neat tools, very specialized.
Mm-hmm.
And those are expensive, and so they pass the cost on to the dog owner.
Mm-hmm.
And the results of going to a specialist are usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
They do a real good job. I know some of the surgery specialists up here are just excellent, good people and excellent doctors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I needed something with one of our dogs, that's where I would go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself counseling pet owners about this when they begin to encounter illnesses with their pets? I mean, how do you frame it for them? Because it sounds like you start down a road, you know?
Yeah. Doing emergency medicine, we pretty much take care of the immediate needs and then kind of pass it back on to the regular vet. And if he or she can handle it, then that's what they do.
So you were emergency?
The last 10 years I was,
here,
yeah.
Your time here in Anchorage, for example,
right.
Was primarily. So that's, you're seeing them with trauma, basically.
Right.
Or they're so sick the family's bringing them in because, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. My adventures in emergency pet care have been porcupine quills.
Oh, yeah.
And split pads from running. And then I before the show, I was telling you about Giardia. My dog got Giardia at probably University Lake, and we didn't know what was the matter with her, but it was pretty explosive and pretty bad.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But we went through emergency docs, and really everything went very well. She's always healed up very fast.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just kind of thinking that there's, you know, have you actually had to put any of your own animals down? And what's it like for you when you have to put an animal down?
Well, I've had to put one special dog down, and it was pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Was it here in Alaska?
No, it was in Texas.
Mm-hmm. What kind of dog was it?
It was a Samoyed.
Beautiful. I love Samoyeds.
Yeah, that's a great dog.
Yeah. And was it an old age issue?
Yeah, it was degenerating spinal cord, couldn't walk, couldn't control bladder or urine.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty, he was happy in the front end, but the back end didn't work any longer.
And
we'd gone to specialists, and there was nothing that could be done.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, my dog is still kind of percolating along, and enjoys certain things a lot, like food and walks, although jumping into the car is kind of a challenge. My husband has to kind of catch her rear end and make sure it makes it over the lip of the car. We tried to get a ramp. One of my neighbors had old dogs,
mm-hmm.
and he said, my dogs are gone, and you can use this ramp. And my dog won't have anything to do with it. I thought, oh, this is going to make it really easy. And I tried little hot dogs going up the ramp, everything, and she just will not do it. And so we're back to her leaping in the car with kind of catching her and making sure she makes it,
yeah.
You know. There were a few bad, before we realized that she really needed that help, a couple times where she tumbled back out. And, oh, my goodness, that was really scary. But she managed to not get injured doing that. But so the ramp idea has not really worked, although I was thinking that as a puppy, maybe if we get another puppy, I will work with that puppy when it's young so it's not afraid of the ramp.
Right.
Because I think maybe old dog can't teach new tricks, you know. It seems like a dignity thing to me. She's like, I don't need that.
Yeah, could be.
So let me think. What I would suggest talking a little bit about the common issues that we see in older dogs and kind of leading up to really how you know you're in the arena of maybe having to do something. So first of all, are there common things that older dogs get? Is there a sort of a time, like year 10, year 8? Are there common years that most breeds start to exhibit some problems?
Well, it all depends upon the breed. For example, boxers are just tumor factories.
Really?
Yeah. I saw an 11-month-old boxer and two caring parents, and the dog had lung cancer, and nobody smoked. Just had lung cancer at 11 months. So, you know, that's boxers, unfortunately, get a lot of tumors.
What's that about? Do you know?
Inbreeding.
Inbreeding. Yeah. And environmental factors, maybe, that are...
Probably just inbreeding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And...
So a typical boxer might not live that long, or can you see them live out?
The larger the dog, the shorter the lifespan. For example, Great Danes, if they see 8 years of age, they're real lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And little bitty dogs,
little lap dogs,
they'll sometimes see 18 or 19
and be happy
and be pretty happy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about sled dogs? Since so many Alaskans have them, Alaska Huskies, or I've got a Lab Husky mix. Is that a good blend? It seemed to me that Huskies are a little bit antisocial, but Labs are very social.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was a good blend.
Yeah, it was a good mix.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But the sled dogs, all the sled dogs I've met are just... In fact, I almost came off the trail with three.
Really?
Yeah, and they were the neatest dogs, and they just loved people. And
yeah, so they were social.
They're really.
Yeah. I think in my case, I didn't understand how... So I did have two Alaska Huskies that were given to me sort of suddenly, and I didn't socialize them appropriately. And so they were very bonded. They were siblings, and they were very bonded to each other.
Yeah.
And very spooked by anything else.
Right.
You know? So, and it was before I understood socializing them when they're young.
Right. If you raise two puppies together, they're going to bond to each other, not you. So I always tell people, just get one puppy and get that puppy before your older dog is, you know,
really going downhill.
Yeah, not wanting to put up with a puppy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because they will learn from the older dog very quickly.
We have a caller.
Oh, good.
So I'm going to welcome Sylvia. Hi, Sylvia. You're listening to Hometown Alaska.
Yes. First of all, I wanted to thank Dr. Hightower for coming on and talking about the many things that you can do for older pets. I guess you could say that old is a lot older than it used to be as far as pets go. And we have a cat now that's 15 that had a broken leg, has a pin in it. And you would think he has, this has been a year ago, and you'd think he was a 3-year-old, you know. There's so many things, and even for some kidney disease, some of the things they can do now and just supplement, some things expensive, some things not so expensive. And it's just a great thing to even encourage people to go out and adopt an older pet because,
right,
like I said, they live so much longer than most, you know, or, you know, there are things that can happen to any of them, but they tend to live so much longer than most people think they can. And there was a 14-year-old cat that was just recently adopted from the pound, and we got a 10-year-old cat who is as healthy as can be. And just encourage people to go out and adopt these older pets because there are things you can do now. So thank you very much, Dr. Hightower.
You're welcome, and thank you for adopting pets that are already here.
It's a good yes.
Yeah, and they seem to be more appreciative when you adopt them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Sylvia.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. You know,
I wanted to, she made a point that she was able to adopt pets from the pound, I guess you could call it, and that they were healthy. So is there some assumption that people have that if you go to the pound, you're not going to get a healthy dog or a healthy cat? And do you know what goes on in terms of checking them out?
Yeah, usually, the SPCAs and the pounds have a veterinarian involved that come, you know, will come around and check on the animals. And some of the pounds, I don't know which ones up here, but some of the pounds put stray dogs to sleep. I mean, if they're old or if they're not healthy or broken leg, nobody wants them, they have to put them to sleep. And that's real sad. I couldn't do that.
Be too hard.
Oh.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the numbers are, but I do know I've read articles, I've listened to programs about, spaying or neutering your pet so that there's not unwanted puppies and kittens around. And doing what you can to make sure. I mean, my situation is, a dog that's just loved by its family, but there's so many pets out there that there isn't anybody for them.
Yeah.
Animals, they're not pets. So that's a good suggestion. So you don't have that duty where you the pound.
No.
That would be too sad.
No.
Yeah. Do you have we were talking about the aging of animals, and you said it was very breed specific. We were talking about boxers being so somewhat susceptible to certain illnesses.
Right.
I'd like to talk a little more about that. I'm going to throw out our numbers for our listeners just so they've got it in front of them. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752. Or hometownalaska at alaskapublic.org. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the popular breeds and maybe what to look for in some of them.
Well, in my opinion, for example, border collies and blue heelers, real smart dogs and very stubborn, and they can really outsmart the owners. So you have to give them a lot of exercise, and you got to be able to outthink them.
They need a job.
Yeah.
And you're their job.
That's true.
Yeah, you've got a border collie. So how did you manage that with your dog?
Well, she was an adoption. She was about 4 years. Yeah, 4 years old, and she had been in several households, and so anyway. She's fit in just fine, except she herds the golden retriever all the time, drives us nuts.
How does the golden retriever handle it?
He just
sighs.
Yeah.
And looks the other way.
Right.
Yeah. What we do with our dog, we don't put her in a boarding situation. When we travel, we have a friend. We watch each other's dogs when we're traveling.
Right.
So my dog goes over to an American Bulldog's house, and she's older than he is, and he is the most patient. She tries to boss him around, whether she's at his house or he's at her house.
Yeah.
She's trying to say, you can't go in the door. And he just sits down and looks the other way. Just says, get over yourself.
Yeah, well, that's...
So they have relationships, I think.
Yeah.
Is there a time, we were talking about maybe introducing a young dog into a family that has an older dog. Let's talk a little bit about good timing on that.
Well, in my opinion, an 8-week-old puppy that's in good health could go into a family with, like, for example, our 10-year-old golden retriever, learn a lot. You say sit, and the golden retriever sits, and the puppy sees that, and he sits too. And he's all just learned something.
He's just a sponge.
And, they just, they learn behaviors, and they learn commands, and they learn all kinds of things from an older dog. It's pretty amazing how much they
pick
up.
That's kind of inspiring, actually. That makes me feel good. My husband was recommending we do that, and I had grown up with when I went away to college, my mom was feeling the loss, and even though we already had a dog, she got a little dog, and he just took over, and he just kind of corralled the old dog, made him sit in the back of the doghouse, and, he took the top of the doghouse, all kinds of things that, he just unseated the old dog. And so I was always opposed to that idea.
Yeah.
But now hearing you talk about it, it's a it's a situation you have to be careful about.
Well, if you get the same breeds,
you might work better
luck.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if we got another border collie, which we're talking about, and the other border collie is around, then he's going to have two border collies and not know where to go because they're both going to be herding him.
Yeah.
So
it's a little bit too many, two on one kind of situation. So you're going to hold off a little bit.
Yeah, I think
Yeah. We have another caller, so I'm going to welcome. Hi, Don. You're on Hometown Alaska. What's your question?
My question is following up on the issue of putting down the dog when the veterinarian will not do it because the dog could be repaired. And so, but it seems to me a legal and ethical kind of question to know what to do in the case where the owner of the pet says, no, I can't afford to pay for all of these operations, and so I'm going to leave the dog with you, and you decide what to do. Now, is there a legal basis for the vet sending a bill to such a person for repairing the dog, or what can he do?
Good question. I suppose, I think we've got a couple of questions here. One is the vet allowed to
insist?
Yeah.
Insist that you have certain treatments?
Yeah, I mean, we basically suggest treatments. And the owner makes a decision on whether he wants to do the treatments. And if he doesn't, it's his dog. And nobody's ever left a dog with me in 40 years. But
said, you take him because I can't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you find, I guess, in 40 years, you've probably seen and heard everything, is my guess in your practice.
I keep thinking that, but something surprises
me. You keep getting surprised.
Me.
I'm just wondering whether you find a common attitude in pet owners where about the right time they're starting to think about it, or do you find that some people are thinking the first sign of old age, they've got to let this animal go, or others who are very reluctant to, I did raise this idea of keeping the dog alive for yourself as opposed to for the dog.
Right. I'm sure there was a question in there.
Well, I guess I'm sort of saying it's back to the counseling. I feel like I know I was wanting to talk to my vet about this and asking for advice. And so I'm sort of saying, do you find yourself giving the same advice over and over again, or do you sometimes say, wait a minute, this, just as our caller was saying, this dog's got... He's really going to be fine if we just do X, or you really need to let this dog go, or this cat.
Mm.
What is it all over the map for you?
Yeah, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a typical client
mm-hmm.
with a typical pet. They're all different.
Yeah, when I was telling you before, my cousin raises black labs, and he was saying to me, if there's an error, it's an error on the side of keeping the animal alive too long. Would you agree with that?
Keeping a dog alive just because you don't want to lose it is not a justification for the dog if it's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So, the client's decision.
You always treat it like that. It's the client's decision.
Yeah, it's their, their dog, their pal, their
family,
pet, mm-hmm. family, and so they need to decide what to do about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. You give them some. You tell them what you think.
Yeah, and give them options and mm-hmm. let them choose.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to make the decision.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are going to take a little break here. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. Longtime Alaska veterinarian John Hightower. Actually, longtime veterinarian last decade or so in Alaska, John Hightower, is our guest. And we'll be back in the second half hour. And we're really going to drill down a little bit deeper on how do you know or what are the ways to think about whether the time has come for your dog or your cat. And so we will be back. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I have Dr. John Hightower in the studio with us today, and we're talking cats and dogs and healthy aging of cats and dogs and also a little bit about the difficulties towards the end of their life. And I was going to tell Dr. Hightower what my vet said to me, because I was starting to get interested in this topic as my dog, Claire, aged, and I said, you know, how do I think about it? And he said, well, what you really ought to do is think about the three or four things your dog really, really loves to do, and think about them and name them. And then as you see that your dog is not able to do those things anymore, then you're really getting into the realm of maybe thinking about the quality of your dog's life or your cat's life is such that maybe you might want to think about it. So, Dr. Hightower, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, the quality of life is one of the things that veterinarians can assess, and also, you know, the people at home can assess. A lot of times I see people keeping a dog alive or a cat alive much longer than it needs to when it's suffering. And I basically tell people that ask about when's the right time to put the dog to sleep. And I tell them that if they wouldn't want to trade places with their pet, then it's time. And that usually settles the situation. And of course, if the pet's suffering, that's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, or yeah, incurable and can't get up and can do the three or four things that it usually loves to do.
Yeah, then it might be time.
Then it's time.
Yeah. I'm going to welcome a caller on the show. Hi, Matt. You're talking with us on Hometown Alaska.
Hi, Ms. McCoy, Dr. Hightower. Thanks for having me. I called last week, too. That's kind of becoming a regular thing for me.
Well, that's good.
But the reason I'm calling is because I'm actually on a leave of absence using my family medical leave to take care of my newborn son. He's 6 months old. I have a 12 to 13-year-old Alaska Canardly, and you can hardly tell what she is, but I think she's a Shepherd, Rottweiler, Lab mix of some sort.
A Heinz 57.
Yep, and she's been a great dog, one of the smartest dogs I've ever had, and so I've had her, you know, been 12 years. My former commander, when I was up at Alpha, had found her. And I put a lot into this dog in terms of training. She's a real challenge because she was really smart. But she had a high degree of separation anxiety. But now she's getting older. I got this infant son. And, you know, she had some issues with her knees growing up as well, besides also some other problems with sociability. She's not a very social dog, like children or other dogs for that matter. She more or less tolerates them, gets kind of bullied, but will sometimes snap, and I'm concerned about this combined with her age. And then she's experiencing some stiffness in her knees. It had two knee stabilizations performed on her when she was, I think, 3 and 5. And it was just the, you know, cross, like fish zip tie type thing to help her out, and it has helped, but she's starting to get some lack of mobility and I think some sensitivity in her hindquarters because she's starting to do her business not in one place anymore, and sometimes does it in the house, doesn't know that she's done it, but then realized it's pretty embarrassed.
Yeah, I'm Matt, I'm having the same issue with my dog. Yeah.
But I was just wondering what Dr. Hightower thought about the sociability aspect.
That's an interesting question, actually.
Because, you know, my wife and I talk, and we have a, I don't know what it is. Our cat's not the most social cat either. I'm a pretty social person. I try to get out, but our animals aren't necessarily that great around other people. And you know, we're worried that the dog should something, you know, should my son be crawling here in the next month or so, you know, get close to her, she might bite him. And, you know, and realize the dog could kill versus maybe a cat injuring. We're hoping to find, we've got a potential placement for the cat, but the dog is the concern.
So it's about an aging dog and a new arrival of a young child. What do you think, Dr. Hightower?
Well, how old is the dog?
She's, when I got her, she was between 6 and 8 months old, so she's about 12 and a half right now. She's about 80-pound dog.
Yeah.
So she's up there.
For a dog that size, their life expectancy is a little shorter than a smaller dog, and so, there are behavioralists that will help, but at 12 years of age, you know, it's going to be pretty hard to change her attitude and train her not to do something she's probably been doing all along. And so, you know, the best thing is just to keep the kid away from the dog, or the dog away from the kid.
Just make that the policy.
Are there any behaviorists here in Anchorage?
Not that I know of. You can go online and look around. There may be. I mean, I just don't know of any.
I remember reading about a dog whisperer in the paper. I don't. You'd have to do a little research, and I don't know if they're still around. I think maybe there's obedience schools and things like that have some.
You could certainly call obedience schools. I don't know if they would be able to help very much, but they might. So that would be one avenue.
But an old dog, new tricks, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that's not a good combination.
Yeah, so maybe, Matt, it sounds like maybe you have to keep the little guy away or the little girl away from the dog.
Yeah, well, as far as, you know, other dealing with the behavior, you know, we've got an option of, you know, she's an inside dog. I mean, I got her up in Fairbanks, and a brutal place for anybody in the winter. But, can tranquilizers help out with some separation anxiety? Because usually if I have her separated, I get by a door either outside to inside or the garage to the inside of the house, there's whining and barking.
That's a good question.
most of the sedatives... Excuse me. Most of the sedatives that we use are just going to delay her reaction time. And if she's going to bite, she'll just bite a little slower. So I don't think there's any medicine that I would say you can give to a dog that's going to change behavior.
You know, Dr. Hightower and Matt, we did get another caller who, Sylvia is back, and she has some information about dog behaviorists.
Oh, good.
Join us, Sylvia.
Yes, I just wanted to let you know about there's a wonderful lady who works with dogs and cats and other animals, Shannon Basner, who has a rescue group called Mojo's Hope, M-O-J-O-S, Mojo's Hope. And she's worked with lots of animals. It's done amazing things. And she rescued a 12 to 14-year-old large dog and rehabbed it. It just has written some books, and the newspapers covered a story about a dog that she had actually with a wheelchair on the back and everything. It was just, she does amazing things, but again, she is wonderful with animals, and I would suggest her to anyone, and that's Shannon Basner, B-A-S-N-E-R, with Mojo's Hope. So just wanted to put that word in.
Okay, well, thank you, and we'll check out all these things.
Really,
okay.
That's what
okay,
I...
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a
okay.
lot, Sylvia. It just seems to me that when dog owners get together, they do have a lot of information to share with one another.
Right.
And have walked through this, you know, path before. So that was great, Matt. I'm glad that she was able to give you a name.
All right. Thanks, Ms. McCoy and Dr. Hightower.
Good
yes.
luck.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Matt. So anyway, we were sort of, I mean, it's kind of a sad show to talk about the end of a pet's life, but I guess I just feel like I want people to be able to hear how to think about it. And we did talk about, you know, the three or four things your animal loves the most. But I was thinking, actually, Matt's question about behavior changing reminded me of a little bit about my dog's voice has changed. It's gotten, her bark has gotten much more piercing, and I read somewhere that actually the vocal cords can be affected. Is that something that, what other changes can you expect in an aging cat or dog?
Well, deafness is one, cataracts, and vision loss. Some breeds have a, what we call a progressive retinal atrophy, but that comes on fairly young. Arthritis and heart valve problems, probably, and cancer, of course. And those are probably the top ones. And some dogs, if they're overfed, will get diabetes, and some will, cats especially seem to like kidney failure as a problem in of old age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's...
That's kind of what to expect.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to think my dog can't hear me anymore. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, she seems like she does, but a lot of times I'll find her out in the backyard staring into the corner of the fence.
Uh-oh.
And I'm wondering if she's gotten lost out there a little bit.
Good possibility.
Yeah.
They do, it's kind of hard to test for this. In humans, it's easier because, you know, you ask them questions and a human can't get a grasp on what you're saying or can't remember what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
But
can't repeat it
dogs, back. You can't ask them what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that although there's probably not very much in the scientific literature about dementia, I'm sure that it does happen. You know, pretty much same diseases that old people get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that she really loves her routines.
Yeah.
Like the morning routine is really important, and it sets the tone of the day
mm-hmm.
if we do everything right.
Right.
Here's another question for you. I've read that lots of panting can mean a sign of pain. For me, I feel like it's sometimes just an inability to settle.
Yeah. Anxiety. They pant for a lot of different reasons. Yeah, but anxiety, yeah, that can be a thing that'll cause them to pant. And my dogs will come in out of the snow and just walking around, and one or both of them will sit down and pant. And
mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that not really a...
not guaranteed that there's something wrong, but...
No, it's a pretty normal
yeah.
dog thing.
And the other thing is, Matt mentioned separation anxiety, and my dog is starting to follow me around the house. So if I go into the restroom, she'll be right there outside the door,
right.
You know, just checking to make sure I'm
yeah.
still here. Or sometimes she'll check the bed. She'll come to the side of the bed, and if I'm not there in the bed, like maybe I got up and she didn't know it, she'll just stare there, like, and she'll be surprised to see that I'm not in the bed, you know. So
Yeah.
Just there's I mean
old age.
Their acuteness is dimming.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see. I talked a lot about you said drinking a lot of water might actually be a sign of an illness?
Kidney disease or kidney failure. They drink a lot of water and urinate a lot. Diabetes, one of the key signs is, we call it polydipsia, polyuria polydipsia.
Mm-hmm.
It means they drink a lot of water and urinate a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the sugar level and anyway.
Yeah.
So those are two things that drinking a lot of water would suggest to me, although there are more than just two.
Just two things, yeah. I'm going to share our phone number with our listeners one more time. We're at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752. And hometown@alaskapublic.org is our email address. I'm going to welcome another caller on the line. Hi, Rita. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the line. I just had a few comments. As a longtime multi-pet owner, dogs and cats, had many geriatric animals. Have a couple of geriatric cats I recently inherited from an elderly person who went to the nursing home. But in any case, about the dog that's a little grumpy and may be getting doggy Alzheimer's, what I found over the years, especially with my difficult animals, because I always kept the ones that were difficult, is investing in the extra-large Midwest crates. They're a wire crate, not a plastic. They have a plastic removable tray, and they make a lovely addition to your living room. You put it right in the middle where the dog can be part of the organization of what's going on. Send them in with a treat, a toy. They're with the family, but they're kept safe so they're not snapping at young children coming in and out of the house. They're sleeping, and you can walk them in and out. Plus, you could clean up so nicely when they have their dribbles and drips.
That's a great idea. Awesome. I like that. Thank you.
Right now, I have one of those boxer dogs with the rescue, and I got pet insurance, and I advise anyone getting a boxer to get pet insurance because I've used it a lot. He's 5 years old. He's had many surgeries. But one of the drawbacks of adopting older pets is the cost, and I've had two dogs when I adopted at 9 that had Cushing's disease, very expensive disease to manage.
Mm-hmm.
He lived a long and healthy life, but I was destined to die. He died of something else. So
word of caution.
Yeah, one thing to consider with older pets is your financial resources, because when they become a member of your family, you need to be responsible and take care of them as best you can for as long as you can keep them healthy and happy.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Rita. We've just gotten a lot of phone calls, so I want to just ask a few other people to join us. But thank you, Rita. That was a really, really thoughtful comment, and I appreciate it. I'm going to welcome Kenneth on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Thank you, Dr. Hightower.
Mm-hmm.
Over many years, I've had several different Australian cattle dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that they're, aside from being really smart dogs, they're extremely active dogs.
Right.
The most recent one I had was probably the best Frisbee dog I've ever been around, extremely agile, and lived until she was 13. And I think towards the end of my life, I didn't learn some of the, or her life, I didn't learn some of the lessons that I believe cattle dogs and perhaps the other working class dogs do not display the pain that they're in. She had cancer and lost the use of her hind legs, and yet she continued to try to be very active. Has that been your experience also? That with working breed,
especially the blue heeler, they are tough as nails.
And they won't reveal it. They won't show pain.
They'll walk around on a broken... I had one... I can tell you his name. Anyway, this blue heeler, I had some dead trees, and I was cutting them down with a chainsaw, and I'd put the dogs up. And then I had to buck the trees once they were on the ground, and I let the dogs out. And this blue heeler of mine came over and protected me from the chainsaw by biting the end of it while it was going. I didn't even see him coming.
Oh.
And she went off and was embarrassed that she was hurt.
Wow.
Sewed her up, and 2 days later she was jumping off the picnic table.
Good.
And
happy end to that story.
Yeah. And she was afraid of cows.
So, Kenneth, did we answer your question?
Yes, I think it just kind of confirmed I shouldn't have gone on with the constant cancer operations, trying to get her to live to her 14th year.
Yes. It's hard to say goodbye. Yes. Kenneth, I'm gonna invite some other callers on just because we're getting close to the end, and we're just trying to reach as many of our listeners as we can. But thank you for your call, and I'm going to welcome Celia on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Celia.
Hi. Yes. I have two 15-year-old dogs, and I guess it's kind of ancient for a big dog. She's pretty big. And her sisters, you know, and baby, she's kind of run kind of fat, and she's extremely intelligent, but I prepared myself to, you know, put her down, but I just figured out how to go about it. She's got to where she wanted to eat her treat the last couple of days, and she's gone in her room, she goes out like I just heard you said, drinks water and a lot, wants to go out every 20 minutes or so. And the question is, I don't know where to take her. They talk about cost, and they, you know, put her down maybe around 50. Her quality of life is really not good. I don't want to see her suffer. I really didn't want to let her go. I brought her into the world. I delivered her myself for her and her sister.
So Celia, is your question what to do now?
Yeah, I don't know where to go. They talk about the cremation. It's wintertime. I keep burying. They talk about, you know, like $400 of cremation and so much to put her down. And
well, is there some options?
I'm on a fixed income, and I don't know if some places take payments. I could pay like 50 or something on out there, you know, and make payments. But I want to maybe do this next week, you know, and her name is Bay. She's so smart. She did the last thing, went and got her, took me all the way over to her sister. She's a Houdini.
So, Celia, I really, we have to answer your question and welcome some other callers on. So I'm not sure. Do we have a solution or a suggestion?
I really don't know what to tell you to do with that. You know, the financial burden that you've taken on is there and needs to be addressed.
Would the Humane Society be someone to talk to?
You could certainly call.
Because I know I saw on their website, you know, dealing with grief, they had a lot of advice, and maybe they would have some options. So perhaps the Humane Society.
Yeah, Humane Society.
Celia, I really feel for you.
Is there an emergency room? Would they give her? They talk about remains. I mean, can I bring her home and take care of her here, bury her at home? Or,
you'd have to ask them
at the emergency pet.
Right.
You should get on the phone and talk to some of the emergency pet services in town and see what they can tell you. Celia, thank you. I'm going to go to David. David, you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm calling you from Cordova. I would like to pass on some information that might save cat owners in particular some grief. And it was a result of a research project I was doing for a salmon out in Bristol Bay years ago. And I contacted Ralston Purina about using salmon parts for cat food. And they did advise me, this was back in the 80s, that because of the exceptionally high manganese content of salmon, that it was really not a preferred item for cats because it would tend to burn their kidneys up. And that can be substantiated, I'm sure, but this is anecdotal, something I ran into years ago, and I avoid salmon as much as possible, even in Cordova here with my cats. So.
Is it just cats, David, or is it dogs too?
I was only advised that it was cats. But okay. I think it'd be worthy of doing some research for all pet owners to be certain that you're not getting too much of that, because it did cause premature kidney failure in their estimation. So,
okay, I've not
news to you.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, David. I glad you got to share that information. We don't have a yay or a nay on it exactly, but it's certainly interesting to know. And I want to thank you for calling into Hometown Alaska. I'm going to welcome Liv onto the show. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. What's your question, Liv?
You talking about Lynn? It looks like Liv.
Oh, well, I think it's Lynn, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry.
Well,
hi, Lynn.
Guide dogs. I've had 5, and I have my 5th. She's a poodle. I've had Labs and Goldens. And when you put down a guide dog, it's very difficult, and because you're so attached to the dog guide as a blind person. And I just want to let people know that. And I actually feed my dog fresh food. I have a dog nutritionist in Nevada who I knew in Los Angeles. And I don't feed regular food, and I do homeopathy with my dogs.
Do you have a question, Liv? Lynn?
No, I just wanted to give some information just about having, when you have a guide dog, you know, it's very hard to deal with the grief and stuff. And I think that, you know, is there any way to deal with grief and get people to, and vets are really good about the guide dogs. They love to see the guide dogs in their place because, because they're so well behaved. So thank you for having the show. I really appreciate it.
Right.
My last dog died of lymphoma, so. That was really upsetting at 6.5, and that was really upsetting. So.
Yes. Have you cared for guide dogs, Dr. Hightower?
No, I haven't.
No, you've not. Okay, well, Lynn, thank you so much. We're going to take one more call from Penny. Penny, we have about 30 seconds. What is your question?
Oh, my question is a little different from the others you've had. What about the human getting old? And if you die, what happens to your dogs? All the friends I know who are dog people have too many already, and the others are not interested in dogs. I have no family. What's the best thing to do if you're dead and the dog's alive?
Oh, that's a good question. Make some friends real fast and put them in your will.
Write a will.
There's not a good answer to that other than, to keep trying. And there's a place in Utah that is a no-kill facility, Friends of Pets, I think. And put that in your will.
Yeah. Find someone.
Yeah, they take good.
I've been trying for years now.
Friends of Pets in Utah.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
good
Penny.
Luck.
Thank you so much. Wow. So, Dr. Hightower, what do you think with all these questions? I feel like we really tapped into people's emotions there at the end.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah, I think it's too bad that euthanasia in people is not allowed, because I think there's quite a few people that could benefit.
Yeah.
But.
Well,
we're not there yet.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
And that's another program.
And we suffer with our pets. So I guess we have a couple of stories on the website for people to look at. If we get any more links from Dr. Hightower that he thinks would be useful based on the questions, we'll add them. I'd really like to thank you so much for coming in today, Dr. Hightower.
No, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And actually thank our callers. We had some really good questions,
yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, some good questions.
Not only about aging pets, but about aging owners, which was really astute. So I really want to thank the callers as well, because they really helped make the program. I'd like to let folks know that next week, Charles Wolforth will be back as your host on Hometown Alaska, discussing the current activism around education funding. That should be an exciting show. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.